We're recording now. All right.
Got it.
Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm pretty excited because I've got filmmaker Kevin Grossman with me. And by the way, hey, Kevin, you want to say hey?
Hey there.
Kevin's a little under the weather. Otherwise, we would have been in person. So we're on Zoom. So if you don't like the audio quality, just blame the people at Zoom. It's not our fault. But if you heard a little pause when I was introducing Kevin, it's because, honestly, I could introduce you a lot of different ways because, you know, actor, I know you as the writer and director of Me Is You, which is a short film that I just absolutely love. And then, hey, what do you know? We happen to be emailing, I think, about Me Is You being in the Discover Indie Film TV series, which it will be in for season 7, which comes out January 15th. By the way, I think this podcast might come out this week, that week. Like, we're recording this at the very end of November, and Kevin doesn't feel well. But, yeah, I think this might be the magical podcast that comes out the same week as that, as season 7 of the TV series. But anyhow, part of my laborious, ungraceful introduction of you, Kevin, is that when we were emailing about the TV series, you said, hey, I got a couple one-act plays performing, you know, over here in LA, if you're interested. And you did not know this, but, like, I got, like, a, I don't know, New Year's resolution. I have promised myself I'll go to more live theater, and particularly indie theater, because, like, you know, what can I say? We used to go to the Pantages, and I always kind of hated those shows. Like honestly, I kind of hate musicals. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're good. Yeah. By the way, I loved Cabaret. I loved Hedwig and the Angry Inch. But, like, you know, take me to Hello, Dolly, and I just start thinking of ways to like, fake a stroke so I can get the fuck out of there before intermission. So that's me. So I went and saw Kevin's, I believe you wrote two of them in there, and you were acting in them, and or was it three of the plays were yours?
Only two of them were.
Yeah, two of them were.
Yeah, only.
But they
only
were
two of them.
Excellent, and I really enjoyed it. So
thanks.
This is the long way for me to say I was thinking of introducing you as playwright/filmmaker. / actor. You're a multi-hyphenate, you know, you're aiming for an, what did they call it, the EGOT. So anyway,
Kevin, I mean, Grossman, you know, you gotta be, unfortunately. Now that's how it is. You have to, you know, it's like you know, I want to just act, really, but it's just it's impossible, it seems, to unless you, I don't know, get that. I should have started acting at, like, I should have been a child actor. I should have, could have been a contender. But, you know, if I had started at, like, 5 years old, maybe I could have paved the way for my, for myself to be, like, really getting work. But, you know, I have an audition today. It's one line. The line, I don't think I'm not saying the project. I'm literally just saying hi. That's my line. I'm just saying the word hi.
And you got to wrap your heart around it and really sell that hello. Yeah. Hey, how's
That's
it going?
That's right. So this is what the landscape is. Now, it's for a decent project. It's like for a legitimate, like, big time thing, but it's literally, that's what I have to work with. So, you know, and there's already so many people submitting these tapes. You know, I don't know how many tapes they're going to watch. So I don't even know if they're, you know, I don't even.
Yeah. But know so, if watch so in spite of, you know, maybe if you started acting earlier, you might have made more headway, but also based upon Me Is You, which I also should mention, won an award at Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021, took home Programmer's Prize. And,
that was, it's your prize. It's
literally that is my your prize. That's
the prize
that's
you
the
get.
Prize. That's the,
that's the prize where so you're the only good voter.
They're so fucking good. And, like, I look at the votes coming in, and so that I don't have to, like, I mean, what it means is it means that, like, your film was, like, came right behind another film, like, 2-3 times. And when I see that, I'm like, well, then you're getting a fucking programmer's prize. Cause like the jury doesn't know. Like if the jury knew that someone was coming in second a bunch of times, they'd probably like bump it up somewhere. So instead of me putting my finger on the scale, I just give you my own personal award so that I don't have to.
So it didn't make some of those others because it was, but it was like almost there.
Almost there.
You're massaging and generally, my ego.
I mean, look, if I thought it was the best film of the year and no one else on the jury liked it, it still might get a programmer's prize. But yeah, it was like totally. I mean, you know, we do. I mean, it's plus I know awards aren't important. Like, it's not like you made the film because you, I'm hoping to get some awards on the film. Like, you're just sharing your work. But by the way, I was going to say, I interrupted myself, I guess, mentioning the award, but you have a very unique perspective. You're a very original writer. You're very creative. So I would have assumed you were always writing. And I would assume even if you were, been on your third sitcom by now, you would still be writing some creative shit because you've got it in you.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I mean, I'm both self-deprecating and I also think that I should be on top. It's very strange. I'm a little bit, but yes, I'm trying, you know. Larry David's a big influence. I could see, you know, that would be, I think a lot of my plays kind of feel Seinfeld-ish a little bit. I don't know where I'm going with that, but I don't know.
But I like that you're self-deprecating and also feel like you should be on top because I'll add that if someone goes back and if they want to have a good time, go to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival website and look at the Q&As for 2021.
Oh, God.
And no.
Yeah, I was like really guzzling the wine. I was guzzling down the wine.
You had had some drinks.
I inhaled the wine and I was like, I think I was nervous, you know. I think, you know, I don't do a lot of interviews.
You got up there and you were like, I basically like we had this silly buddy comedy thing going almost where I was like,
yeah,
this movie's fucking great. And you're like, no, it's not. Let me tell you what's wrong with it. And I'd be like, no, actually, that's still great. And you're like, no, it was almost like, you know, talking about a different movie. But that's because that was your humility and your lack of your self-deprecation. And, you know, what can I say? I'm at a film festival and me as you is great fucking work. So, yeah,
I just felt
like I don't care. I'm in my 50s. Young man like yourself is self-deprecating. I'm going to be like, yeah, feel free to self-deprecate. I'm going to do, what is the opposite of deprecate? Is it praise? I don't know. Undeprecate.
Well, I mean, if you had gone along with my self-deprecating, I probably would have been a little alarmed. So
you would have said, what an asshole.
I'm glad that you were the yin to my yang because, if you had just been like, maybe it is kind of not that great. You know, I probably would have been like, what's the point of this? Why are you interviewing me? You're just going to let me,
sitting there with like, I believe there was like 50, 60 people in the audience too. Like, why are you talking shit about me in front of 50 people? I'm talking shit about me. I'm allowed.
I'm allowed, but you're not allowed. Okay. You know,
no one else should be allowed.
No, but it's funny. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, what else can you do? You're kind of forced to, but I appreciate it. I appreciate you leveling me out there.
Well, and I'll say, you mean I'm forced to be positive?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, if I'm shitting on myself, you have to lift me up.
To prop you up some more, I'm not forced to be positive. It's just we got like over 800 movies last year submitted to us, and we showed like the 60, 70 best. Maybe it was 90 last year. Last year we went pretty deep. But I mean, we only take the top 10%. So like everything in the festival is really fucking good. So, like, I don't have to, I mean, it's been since like 2018 that I had to pretend to like a movie at a Q&A.
Well, that's great. Yeah. I mean, and also it's obviously you have a big hand in selecting. I mean, I think you have a major hand. So it's like, if you chose it,
but yeah, if there's something, if Although honestly, it's been years since I had to champion something. Because I always think, like, if the jury doesn't like this one, I'm going to champion it and push it all the way through. And then, like, everyone kind of has similar taste, I guess, or good taste. I should say our jury has good taste.
Nice. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, but so, no, I appreciate it. Obviously, obviously whatever was in there, you obviously whatever films are in there, it makes sense that you would like them.
And, yeah, yeah, I should. I know, it'd be like, it'd be like, you know, having an art gallery and standing in the middle of it and going, that's a piece of shit. That's a piece, like why would, if you're running the art gallery, why would you have pieces of shit on the walls? Yeah,
exactly. I mean, I suppose there is an element, and I bet you this happens at festivals where there are people where they put a film in because there's a name attached or there's some sort of buzz or something going on. And they're like, you know, they put that in there and that'll help get notoriety to the festival and things like that. So that's, I mean, then that's probably part of the big challenge of doing a festival is you probably get sent things where it's like, oh, maybe I could use this to my advantage, but the film is shit. But, you know.
I mean, full confession, we chose to turn our backs on, we're a nonprofit, right? A nonprofit runs the festivals. And so, like, we say no to shitty films with names in them because it doesn't happen all the time, but we've gotten films with pretty big names and they suck. And someone on the board is like, you know, you really should take it. Even just having this person's picture in like a thing will help the festival. I'm like, yeah, but we only show good films. And like, that's the reputation we've built for 7 years and I won't let go of it. But, by the way, I'm going to name somebody who I think is a very good actor, actually. And he just so happened to be in something terrible we were given. And it's Shia LaBeouf. Like, we got a terrible Shia LaBeouf film once.
Really?
And I was like, I really like this dude, actually. And like, I thought, what was it? Peanut Butter Falcon was like one of the best movies that year. And I thought he deserved all kinds of Oscar consideration. And he got looked over for it. But I think that dude's great. But we got given a piece of shit with him in it. And I was like, no way. I actually did have to fight to keep it out. Because
wow.
But so that's our point of view.
I'm curious to know, but you won't tell me, I'm sure. But God, I wonder what that could have been. When how recent was this? When was this?
It was a couple years ago. It was pre-COVID. So
interesting.
But anyway, that's the biggest thing. Although this year we had another film with like a couple of recognizable actors in supporting roles. And it was just kind of, what can I say? Yes, I'm the dude, like there's a team behind this festival, but I'm the main guy. And I'm also the motherfucker sitting in the theater representing the festival. And if I have to sit on that stage and say I'm the head programmer, is it ego or integrity or a mix of both? Like, I can't sit there and pretend that, like, we just showed a piece of shit film and I believe in it. Like, I'm just not.
I hear you.
I did that the first couple of years because I had no choice because I wasn't totally in charge.
Right.
And, like, I'm like, fuck it. We'll be the festival with integrity.
Hey, that's a good way to go. Yeah, no, I admire that. No, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
That is.
Because I imagine the festival, that's the best.
Oh, go ahead. We're talking about the festival that showed me as you. So what I like to do on this podcast now, I'm just going to like pin you down metaphorically and insist, go back to your childhood. How far back do you have to go for your interest in writing and or acting?
Definitely very early, I think. I don't know. I mean, I was very obsessive about movies at a young age. I was like sort of, you know, in very traditional kind of ways, though. You know, I was probably a little bit of a nerd, but I mean, even, yeah, from 5 years old on or whatever, I was like super obsessed with like Disney stuff, which kind of sounds lame now because I'm actually like a super, I'm super anti Disney now. It's like everything.
Yeah, but
I hate.
But it's what you were shown as a kid.
It's what I, yeah. I mean, Aladdin was like a movie I was obsessed with, and then it like grew into other stuff. But I think, you know, my parents sensed that I was like obsessive about movies, and they thought, oh, well, he should be an actor, or, and I don't know, maybe they thought, I think they maybe thought, oh, well, maybe we could get him to be a child actor and we could cash in or something. I don't know what they thought, but the, you know, it didn't happen. I mean, if they really wanted to do it, I would have been happy with it because now that's what I want to do. But they didn't really commit to that, but they did say they thought, I can't remember if it was them who said it first or if I said it, but I know there was like some project where it was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I know actor was somehow what we said.
And you grew up around here, right? You grew up in LA?
I was born here. I grew up in Sacramento, and then and I came back here a lot because a lot of my family is from here.
Gotcha. So it wasn't like you were growing up in the shadow of the industry either. Like if you're up in Sacramento and thinking about it, like it's, you're a little more distant. Like it's not like your parents could have started dragging you around.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't, they didn't really, you know, if they really wanted to do it, they could have taken me down here. We could have stayed at my grandparents' place in Tarzana, and we could have gone out for some auditions, could have gotten me a child actor agent or whatever. And they could have been, you know, we could have really gone for it, but they didn't commit to it. I think they said they took me to some baby commercial audition. But
that would have
anyway,
been a story.
That would have been something. Yeah. But so
and it was mostly acting or were you also a creative kid who liked to write stuff, stories and things?
I was definitely into that. And then, you know, I morphed into all this stuff with like the Star Wars and the Indiana Jones and all that shit. That stuff came more into it. And then I just kept evolving, but a lot of weird, everything is kind of definitely tied with a love with movies, obsession with movies. And then I think a lot of neurosis was involved too, because I have OCD that like kind of sort of emerged at like 6 years old, which I feel like my family is sick of me talking about having OCD, but it's,
hey, they're
really
not here. They're not here.
It's so. A big part of me, but, I think it's a big influence on a lot of the creative side of me though, in a way, but, I definitely was into like writing stuff, making stuff. I had ideas for things. I wrote all sorts of things when I was younger, and then, yeah, it just kept going from there. I mean, I think that I definitely realized at a certain point that like as an actor, it would be smart if I tried to write something fit for myself, because I knew that even as a teenager, I realized that I was a kind of specific person. So specific type. So it was going to be necessary. It would be a good idea for me to write something for myself. I think that kind of did dawn on me, maybe. I don't know. You know, I wrote
like in high school, like were you doing like middle school, high school plays and stuff, or
I did plays in high school. I did like stuff in middle school. Yeah. I did plays all through elementary school. I had a lot of stage fright until I was like maybe 9 or something. Cause I tried to like get in plays when I was a kid, but I was super nervous. Then at like 9 or 10, I finally got my sea legs and I really kind of came into my own, because we used to make home movies, and I was really, really hammed it up on the home movies. But it took me a second to really do it in front of people. But then I finally came into myself and like really started to enjoy doing it in front of people. And then in high school, I definitely like the OCD hit me in new ways. My body changed. My face morphed. I used to have like kind of a more, I have had more of a like a waspish face. I feel I had more of a like, button nose, and then, you know, I became a teenager, and it's like my nose like just fucking morphed outward, and I just became this kind of what I thought was like a Jewish stereotype, you know, not, you know, anyway, not to be a self-hating Jew, because obviously I embrace my schnoz now. I love my schnoz. But my point is that I went through a lot as a teenager, and so I lost a little bit of confidence there. And I remember the high school plays, I didn't have a great time in high school.
So puberty was rough. But I was going to ask, like, when you were talking, I kind of picked up maybe that when you were doing plays and things, you were like, you know, I'm a specific type though. Like, I could write better for me than these things are. Or did that come later?
Maybe a little bit. I just knew that, like, you know, it's funny. I kind of think Garden State sucks. I really don't like Garden State, but I think when I was a teenager, I looked at that movie and I was like, oh, okay, he's kind of doing something that I could do. Maybe I could do something like that. So I kind of thought, oh, okay, well, maybe I could just do that, something like that. And then I wrote a shitty screenplay that was just like based on my own. It was terrible at the end of high school. That I feel like maybe it was influenced by something like that. So I don't know. It's like things like that. Like, I saw people in the indie film world, you know, being these kind of multi-hyphenates or whatever, doing writing, directing, acting, whatever. So I thought, oh, okay, well then that seems like a cool thing to do, because I have ideas and I want to act. So let me craft something for that. So I think that that's probably where that came from, but definitely like has morphed and changed over a lot of time. And one thing I think I started to realize is that what I want to write for myself, I've realized I actually want to write things for myself that aren't like what a lot of other people want to write for themselves. Like, I want to write for myself things where I can play kind of some nasty guys or some weird guys or some creeps. I kind of enjoy that. I'm interested in doing stuff that lets me kind of show different sides of myself or show some imperfections. I'm not really interested in what I feel like a lot of Sundance projects are, these kind of narcissistic, like, here's my film that I made about my life and look how hard it was for me and look at me and all this shit. Like, I want to do things that are like very about, I mean, in a way they are influenced by my life, but that are just very, give me a lot of meat to sink my teeth into as an actor. So I think I've like kind of grown out of wanting to do things even like, I don't know, maybe there's some Woody Allen kind of influence or something like that, but I don't know. Yeah, I have like a very weird aesthetic. And if you see it, like with Me as You, it's like, you know, I clearly like, I have visual ideas, I have dialogue ideas. It's like I want to do all these different things. I want to act, but I also want to do all these other things. I definitely want to turn things on their head a little bit, especially with the idea of an actor helming their own project. Like, I want to do something
much different. Respect, because I know exactly what you're talking about vanity projects. And sometimes, sometimes we get shorts submitted to the festival. And, you know, it's an actor who's talented and they're treating it like a reel, like a piece of their reel.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Like, I want to show myself in the best light possible. I want to look as attractive as I can. And man, when someone, you know, and yet whatever, at the Hollywood level, you know, Charlize Theron does Monster and everyone's like, holy shit, you know, like I think people actually generally respect when you show your warts more than you show your best side. But let me jump back. So high school puberty kind of kicked you and you kind of like got less into performing for a little while, but then.
Well, no, I wasn't less into it. I just was struggling. I was very
struggling. Right.
I was struggling.
So then, what happened with college? Like, did you, what kind of degree did you go for?
Well, I went to Cal State Sacramento, and that was I mean, you know, I definitely got more confidence in college. It's like I got free of a lot of shit once I got into college. But yeah, I went. I was pursued theater as my major, and I took classes on acting and you know, theater history and all this stuff. And then I kind of midway through college decided. I was sort of very influenced by a friend who I'd become close with. To switch to film as my major. So I switched to film. I had taken kind of, I absorbed everything I could from theater in terms of like the acting stuff, from my college, that at least I thought I did. And, so I switched to film as my major and then, so yeah, in a way, then I became very much kind of, I guess, more film oriented in some ways, but as you can see, you know, I still do theater. So, I do both, but, yeah, I definitely think film is like my, that's my favorite, because there's just so much more you can kind of create with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Your palette is more, yeah, you have more to work with.
Right.
But yeah. Also there's something wonderful in the media about theater and, yeah, if you just, right, grab a space, well, it's, you can put something on.
There's definitely a trade-off. I mean, theater, it's like, yeah, it's like you're getting to kind of do it now. That's what's great. Theater, it's like film, you have to wait forever to get it out. It's such a pain in the ass. You have to do all this work to show it to anybody. But theater, it's like ready to go. And yes, no, and I actually do enjoy it more probably as a process, actually. I think I probably do enjoy theater more. But film, it's just, I think, as an end product, I can be happier with, although, you know, maybe I could be happy with an end product with theater. It's just, I've had very little to work with theater. I'm very, you know, black box kind of vibes. So,
I mean, I totally get the balance because they're so, I mean, they're similar, but they're so different because, you know, hey, for the rest of your life, you can actually show people me as you, like you can just show them this film.
Exactly. It's like something that anyone can see at any time.
Yeah.
Theater, it's like,
and it took like 50 to 100 times more work than putting on a play in a black box. But, but like, you know, my apologies for not remembering the names of the plays I saw because they were one act plays. And
that's okay.
I don't even think there, it's not like there was a,
I don't even think there was a program. Yeah.
Yeah. But there wasn't a way to read the names of them. But like, yeah, if I said to someone, oh man, I saw this great one act play about like, you know, accidentally seeing your friend in a porn video. Like that's all I got. That's all I can share. Right. Like, and that's all you could share. Like, whereas I can send someone like, hey, watch me as you in this TV series on Prime Video. And like, you'll see it, but you know, the play is ethereal, right? It comes and goes.
Yeah. You can't put that, recording of a play also, it's just, that's not going to do it justice.
My God, it sucks, right? Even if you do like a sitcom multi-camera thing and try to have some edits, it's just flat.
No, it's terrible. Yeah. I mean, the goal actually with a lot of the plays I write, I oftentimes will, you know, like the plays you saw, I want to turn them into films and I think I will. And the director who is a good friend of mine, Pat Healy, I'm name dropping. He is a remarkable actor, writer, director, also a multi-hyphenate, came out of Steppenwolf in Chicago, studied with Michael Shannon, Tracy Letts. And, we became like very good friends and he very graciously, offered to direct the plays for me. And I was so honored. And this was actually before even COVID started that he did this for me. Right now he's in this great show that's about to premiere, George and Tammy on Showtime.
And he's the guy who was there. He's the guy who, was he the guy there? Like
he was
the
there.
Actor,
yeah.
Who was a little older.
I may have introduced
whose daughter was in his play.
Oh, no, that's Randy. No.
Oh, Randy. No, that's okay.
Randy LaHaye.
Sorry.
No, Great guy, though. No, and his daughter is talented, too. No, I may have introduced you to Pat. I can't remember. But yeah, he was there. He did, like, kind of leave maybe slightly early. But, no, he's a very talented guy. And he directed the plays for me. And you know, one of my goals for next year is we're going to do a night of my plays with him directing. I'm probably going to try to hire a publicist or something, and we're gonna go all in on it, you know.
Excellent. Well, hey, so I'm gonna go back to college. So college, you switch from theater major to film major, and then when you finish, is that when you come head down to LA, or
once I finish college? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I did a thesis film in college. if you're interested in my film, like the history of my filmmaking, like the metamorphosis of it, I made a kind of a very wacky thesis film in college. It was like a dark comedy horror about two guys.
I might
guys.
Know of a platform for it. Maybe. I don't know.
Depends. I mean, it's probably one of the most interesting things I've made, because it really is very uncompromised. I like really didn't I really just did whatever I wanted, and it really is just a little nonsensical. I mean, it's not coherent. I mean, there's problems, because part of it is I had limitations, but I think also maybe my writing was just a little off. I don't know, different things, but it's a crazy fucking movie. It's partly because I was so obsessive, and this is where the OCD came in too. Because I made a thesis film, and my OCD's kicking in, and it's like, oh, it's not good enough. It's not good enough, you know. And I became very obsessive and hell-bent on making it perfect. And so then I graduated college, and I just kept going back to the school. I would park off campus, and I would walk with the hard drive back to my they'd let me keep using the computer lab. They let me just go in there, and I wasn't a student anymore. But I did that for like 6 months, and I just kept working on it. My parents thought I was very, you know, very pathetic. They thought I was, they were like, I don't know what you're doing, but you got to figure out what you're doing. What is going on? But I thought that this film was going to be like in a big festival or some shit, but you know, but I got so obsessive, because I was like, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. I started making it all Brian De Palma-ish, and I made it all split screen and crazy. And I saturated the color, so it was insane. And so I did that for like 6 months after I graduated, or 8 months. And it took my sister nudging me to move out here, because she went to Northridge, CSUN. She was like, she couldn't drive. And she was, I've told this story a bunch of times, I feel. But I mean, I guess not on recording. She got an internship for Conan O'Brien's show. When he had the TBS one, and she couldn't drive. So she just didn't have a license yet. So I could drive. So she was like, just move down here. You have to move. You have to do something and drive me to this internship. And so she forced me, and that was in 2013. So that's how long it's been, like 9 years or something, you know, maybe 10 years. It'll be almost 10 years soon. But, So that's what finally got me to come down
right,
here.
So she pulled you down here.
Yeah.
And then you weren't near that lab anymore. So you just had to, you couldn't keep working on that.
No, it was definitely a good thing. I needed to pull myself apart from that film. I really needed to cut the cord on that, because the thing is, the way my brain works, I could become obsessive if I don't, but also part of it was living in my parents' house was not good for my mental health, I think. Just because it's like I had no independence. I had no – and I was doing that until I was 24. I was 24 years old. So when I finally moved, it was like I had become an adult. It was like I was 18. I like to give myself – this kind of thing to like allow myself to be immature. But I like to say that at 24, I was 18. Cause that's when I like became a individual, you know, it's like when I left the nest.
I mean, there's logic to it, right? Because I know. Whatever. As an uncle slash stepdad slash whatever, like, yeah, when kids stay home for college, I'm like, you're kind of doing it wrong. I mean, there's a lot of arguments for it, and there's costs and all kinds of things, but
yeah,
leaving home and like figuring out how to wipe your own ass and buy your own toilet paper is like, kind of big.
It's huge, and it also, I didn't realize how much I'd like it, because I was extremely scared. I was extremely scared of having to do things on my own, having to take care of myself. I was so deathly afraid that I wouldn't be able to handle anything, partly because I think my parents were afraid, you know, that they didn't think I could. But what I realized is that I was more than ready. I was extremely ready, and I actually should have been doing it, because it would have been all the things that were I was miserable about. It would have been, I would have rectified those things very easily by just going out and being my own person. So, yeah, it took that for me to really, I think, in a way, I found more of a voice, too, as a writer, not to say.
And I mean, I know it's not success. A big deal, but you came down and you were driving her to the Conan show 5 days a week.
It was like 3 days or two.
3 days. Right. I'm sure. Right. Yeah. He shot 5 episodes in 3 days or whatever.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if she was there, if they staffed her like every day or what, but
my leading question or comment was that it kind of all the bizarre things for your sister to be doing, not bizarre, but of all the things for your sister to be doing, it sort of was indirectly putting you in touch with the business of sorts, right? Like I always sense from people that there's a difference between like living in Indiana, where like there's not a single person in your life who has anything to do with film or television, and, you know, being in LA and driving someone a couple of days a week to a television studio, like that's going to be a different level of connection and inspiration.
There was that. But the other thing was I got out there. I mean, I realized that, you know, acting was my passion as always. That has always been the thing that I think I liked most, just because I think I also enjoy it most because I needed something to get me out of my head. And I think acting kind of like feels like this really cathartic thing to get me out. Especially, you know, with OCD and all that. So, I went to a class called Playhouse. I went to this place, Playhouse West, is in North Hollywood that, Jeff Goldblum started with this guy, Robert Carnegie, who was my teacher. And, really great teacher. Meisner stuff, and I met all these great collaborators there who I'm still collaborating with, and I think that really helped me meet people, gave me a sense of community, a place, and then also helped me find my voice a little bit. I'm glad that I didn't stay there forever, but I think that it was a great place to start, so that was a big thing. It's probably the best training I ever had had as an actor. I hadn't had training as good as that in college. You know, college was not even close. So,
Playhouse West is a very reputable, well-liked place.
It's a top spot.
My folks, my folks weren't hipsters or anything, but I believe they had like a membership or something to like go see plays there and stuff. Right. Or
maybe there's a lot of people confuse. A lot of people confuse. I feel like there's another Playhouse. There's a few different Playhouses.
Okay.
Pasadena Playhouse.
Well, there's Pasadena, but no, I mean, I remember a Playhouse West thing, but anyway, go on.
I don't know. They didn't really do, I guess they have they said they had a repertory theater. I don't want to like talk too much about them because I don't know if they would want to be, I don't know.
No, you've said nice things about it. All right. So you did that and got some really good training.
Were you
focusing on acting, or were you doing some writing too all along?
I made more films. I, you know, the thing is I became, As always, like the thesis film, I became obsessive with, then I became obsessive with the class. So then that obsession happened. So I had to pull out of that obsession. And I wasn't really hustling for my career. You know, I was like, oh, I need to become a better actor, you know? So I kept training and training and training. And then I pulled myself away from that and I started to hustle a little bit more. So then I started to, get representation and start going out. And I mean, essentially that kind of got me where I am now, but you know, there's been a lot of other life elements too, because again, it's like, you know, it was the first time I had moved out of my parents' house at 24 years old. So first times for all sorts of things. You know, I did acid, you know, I did all sorts of, you know, so all those
which things, has medicinal qualities, I might add.
I mean, it really, I like to say it did actually help me. A few times I took it, I actually booked two commercial auditions after I was coming down on acid. I booked two commercials, one where I play a sprint lifeguard. It was in a tie-in with the Baywatch film. It was called Sprint Watch, and I was a lifeguard who helps them save money on their phone bill. So I got that, and then I booked that, and I booked some Google thing, you know, and that was just both in the same day after I first took like half a tab of acid. I would say anyone listening, that's not necessarily a proven. Don't.
We can, you know, we urge responsibility for all.
It's not my fault.
But if you take, I mean, what can I say? I have experienced a lot of different things pharmaceutically in my life. And if you are in a controlled situation and you know the substance is coming from a reliable source, you can make intelligent decisions in your life. I am telling people, I'm not saying, yeah, take acid from the first person walking by who offers it to you. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that, you know, it was
good.
A pretty interesting time. I think I benefited a lot from psychedelics. Yeah. That's all I got.
I think, you know, it's good to have Xanax on hand maybe, you know, in case it doesn't work out. That's actually what I have. I have it on hand in case, but I haven't done it in a while. I had a bad experience, to be honest, to be fair. I had a bad experience. I mixed it with weed, actually, and that was really not good. So not always.
Cocktails, but one must be careful mixing substances, right? Because you just don't know. Like two things that are great apart, you know, may not be peanut butter and chocolate. It might be peanut butter and toothpaste. Like it just...
No, you definitely don't want to mix. I don't think you want to mix with psychedelics unless it's like maybe you. I don't know. I don't want to encourage any mixing. Just keep it pure. Keep it to one person.
Keep it pure and keep it from a reliable source. We can leave it there.
Yes.
But we are talking about your career more than drugs. Although drugs are a great topic. Still,
are they going to come get us? Is that those are like Schedule One or Two or one of those?
You know, it's not like either of us had said we sell it. Like,
no, yeah.
Honestly, well, the funny thing, whatever, just to put you at ease, maybe I'll share that, like, you know, I haven't done everything, but I've done everything I've been offered. So,
you've got more open, you're more open than I am.
I suppose, yeah.
Because I'm not like that. I'm not like that at all. It was hard to get me to do acid. It was hard. Like, I did not want to do it. But I can imagine,
because you've dealt with OCD for much of your life.
Yeah, I was very anxious to do it. I thought it was going to be terrible. But I did it, and it was like my brain relaxed. My brain relaxed for the first time. It was crazy.
And you booked stuff, which means you probably gave some good goddamn auditions. But also, Did it affect the writing or anything, or not so much? That's a book.
Oh no, I think so. I think that there was probably. I mean, I like to say that it had, and I feel like there was a personality change. I'd like to say that there was a personality change. There was a personality change over the course of those 10 years of me moving here. My personality morphed. At 24, I was like a nerdy, very anxious, sort of little nebbishy guy. I looked like I was 12. I was very careful about everything. And then about 5 years in, I realized I needed to do something. I needed to go further. And I went out and I was living with my siblings, my sister and my brother. We all moved in together because my brother ended up coming down here too, because he went to Santa Monica City College. So we moved in together. And then in a way that was also kind of like still that thing of like the safety of the familial unit. So I think I broke away from that and I finally really started to take some risks. And it's like my personality morphed and I became this person who I realized that I had different values than my parents. Maybe not in a good way, or maybe in a good or a bad way, but I have different values. I've realized I have a very, I have different things that I want. I have different things that I appreciate. I think I like urban environments. I think I like, I find interest in dysfunctionality. I find interest in, I suppose I got a lot of that from my family, but I mean, there's plenty of dysfunctionality to find there. But, I guess I'm saying is I gravitated toward things that they didn't gravitate toward. So my personality really shifted and I became definitely someone who is into a lot of different stuff. I like to go to music shows. I like to go see just a band play some shoegaze band or something. And I like to have fun. I like to do crazy creative projects. I liked art. I liked, you know, taking risks. I realized that that's actually who I was. And I wasn't that when I moved here. When I moved here, I was not a risk taker. But I realize now I am. That is at heart what I actually wanted. I always, I think, deeply wanted to be a risk taker. And I finally found that. Even though there are still some risks I'm not willing to take. But I am definitely more of one.
Well, and I applaud you because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree that pursuing the creative arts at any level is risk-taking. I mean, you have to be willing. You are putting yourself out there.
Yes.
In many ways.
Yes. I think that inherently, yeah.
Yeah, for shits and giggles, I'm going to ask birth order. Are you oldest?
I'm the oldest, yeah.
You're oldest.
I'm the oldest, yeah. Got 1989.
Right, yeah. And so you were with your two younger siblings. Got it. All right. Birth order is always interesting.
Yeah.
Oldest is the umbrella.
Yeah.
And then the two younger siblings are under here and all mom and dad's stuff hits the umbrella first. I think.
Yeah. I wasn't, I also should say I was only bottle fed. I didn't get the all natural stuff.
Oh, did that come for the younger ones?
They got that, you know, I didn't get that.
No, I mean, whatever. I was a baby in the '60s, man. Like they just, corporate America told every mom in America, your breast milk sucks. Give them formula. So like, that's why I was never really whatever. That's a joke I'll tell later, but I was never cared about breasts. But anyway, like that matters. Okay.
You're not a breast man.
Well, I discovered them in middle age, I think.
Okay.
After my first divorce. Only divorce,
actually. You edit these? You edit these things?
No. I refuse to edit, although I really should not have shared that. I should not have shared that.
Well, you could probably go in and...
Nah, there's no point, you know. People are going to listen to this to hear you, and they'll hear me say that, you know, whatever. So anyway.
All right. People are listening to this, or just kidding. People are going to hear me say all this shit.
People are going to, you know, yeah. Well, it's mostly your fellow filmmakers and stuff, and it's like the indie film community listening. So like, they get it.
Yeah.
Like, probably most of them are like, oh man, you want to talk OCDs? I'll talk all day. Like, I'm sure it's understood. You're in the company of friends. So
yeah.
Playhouse West, when did you, like, is Me as You the first short since college, or was there some other stuff you put together at that, like, after becoming down in LA?
No, I did some other films, but, yeah, I mean, you know, I made a couple, what did I make? I made another film, and then I made some different things. I mean, if you go on my Vimeo, you can see the other ones. They're not, I think that the Me as You is probably the most, like, sort of fully formed. It's probably my first fully formed short in, like, a way that's very cohesive and thought through with the limitations that I knew that I would have. Because I knew that I was only willing to spend a certain amount of money. I wasn't going to, like, put all this money down. I shot it kind of during the COVID stuff. I kind of shot it after the lockdown. Well, the lockdown had kind of lifted in that weird way where they were like, it's sort of open, but it was like October 2020. But I was at that point, I was just so upset. I was like, I want to do something. And so I made this film. And to be honest with you, I already was making films that were small like that. So it wasn't even that much of a stretch for what the kind of stuff I would make. But maybe it informed some of the elements of, like, what I, you know, writing, and because I made it to be all about the writing and the conversation that they have, and make all the visuals very much. It's just two people, you know, in a backyard having this existential crisis.
Yeah, but I mean, I think, like I would have said at the theater, it's like very cinematic. It is very well made.
Thanks,
and
man.
You know, if I said to somebody on the street, yeah, there's this short film, you know, two people in a backyard talking, and it just, you know, and the girl messes with the guy's head, that would not convey the kind of film it is, because, you know, besides the writing and the acting and the filmmaking, you know, and you do stuff with color that most indie filmmakers don't even make an effort to. Like, I'd say it is a very complete work.
Yeah, it's definitely very thought through. And also, oh, you know what? I made a film which you might find interesting. But a year or so before I made this film, which is also, I'm proud of. And it's a one take. It's just me, again, of course, as this character who's sort of this scummy, bro-y, Jewish douchebag guy. And there's a big reveal at the end. But it's like basically a long take that pulls out from my face as I'm having this big monologue. I'm on a date. And I'm talking to this girl, and I'm saying all these horrible things. It's very toxic, masculine shit. And that's shot by the DP who shot Me as You. And I met him. He's a big part of the both films, but Me as You too, particularly, because I think the visuals are partly, you know, he really helped bring everything to life, and has just a really great eye. And I found him working on music videos for this person, Dorian Electra, this pop artist who's very, very big in, like, it's like hyper pop queer scene. Dorian Electra and Charlie XCX are all this kind of the whole big world of people, 100 Gecs or whatever. And so I was working on music videos for Dorian. And Taylor knew them from Chicago and was shooting these music videos for them. And I was so impressed with the visuals. That's why I got involved helping on those music videos, because the visuals were so cool. And I said to Taylor, I said, I want to make a film together. We should do something. And so I got him. And I think that film is partly why it's so visually amazing and why it's so complete, Me as You, is because of him. He really helped bring it to life.
There is no more collaborative medium than film, right? Because there's so many jobs. I mean, one person could try to do all the jobs, but it's very rare for it to work out well unless that filmmaker pulls in. And often it is luck sometimes, right? Like, it's luck if a DP has just the right concept or brings something that the director wasn't thinking. Yeah, but yeah, you got to have great people around you.
And he also, his name's Taylor Russ, by the way, really talented guy. He also did the color for the film too. So he did the color grading and he shot it. So, I mean, and you were talking about the color. I mean, I told him what I wanted. I said, I want the color to be this and that and to switch around and do this. But I mean, he's just so great. I think he elevated it.
And when you told him you wanted to collaborate, did you already have this script or did you write this script for the purpose of the collaboration?
I wrote it to just make something during that time. You know, I was restless. I wanted to make stuff. I wrote it. I was like, let's do something. I want to do something. I gave it to him. I said, you want to shoot this? He was like, I want to do something. And we just did it. You know, we used my friend's backyard. And we shot it, in a day, and we just knocked it out. And we had a very small crew. We had like an AC or a gaffer for Taylor and a sound person and, Madison and me as a talent. And that's it. And we just shot it. It was like a four, I guess, talent. Does that count as crew?
Or is it? No, but it counts as a body on set. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was like a three person crew, I guess.
Right. Three crew, two actors.
Yeah.
Five people in a backyard making a film.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was pretty insane. So, but I mean, you know, in a way I think that there's something to that of like keeping the eye on the ball, you know. Everybody knows what they need to do, and it's almost like there, maybe more people is not. I mean, I guess it could be helpful, but it's like you know, you want to make sure that you're organized and you're doing something. And in a way, I feel like it was a very efficient group, and we just shot it in one day, and it was very efficiently done. So,
and when you got in the editing room, did you edit it or?
I my brother edited it and I was over his shoulder the whole time. And then I edited parts of it. But I wanted to credit him as the editor. And I think, you know, he did edit a lot of it. He was really great,
I'm trying to lead you into saying like, did it, in the editing room, did you see like, oh, we got like, did you love how it came together right away or?
No, I did not. I thought it was terrible. but I kept working at it.
But did you like it by the time you locked the picture?
It took a second, but I finally kind of got it where I wanted it to be. We definitely found that sequence where things get trippy. We found it was supposed to be that way a little bit, but we found how it worked in the post production.
And I mean, it's also a performance piece. It is performance of the camera and everything, but it's also a performance piece between you and Madison. And editing is the performance, right? Like, you're not on stage performing together. You're performing on film. And that edit, man, when an editor doesn't have, well, let me change this because it was you and your brother, but in other words, the timing of editing makes or breaks performances more than people realize.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And it's dangerous. That's why I like someone else to maybe be in a little bit more in charge of editing. As an actor, it's like, I shouldn't be looking at these takes because I'm going to like be very critical of the whole thing. So, So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely very nervous about how I'm going to come across. So we went through a lot of different takes and things. But you know, and it's also just, it's so hard to direct and act, which is something I'm going to try to avoid for a second. I'm going to try to see if I can just get some other people to direct for me, and then I can maybe.
And then see, and then like 2 years from now, you'll be saying, yeah, I tried that. Now I got to direct myself, actually. We'll see. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is that I like the idea that, like, doing my writing and acting, I like that. But I want someone else to have eyes on it. So.
Makes sense. Know. No, it totally makes sense. All right, so you finished that and hit the festival circuit in 2021 once we got vaccines and shit.
Yes. And I got it out and, you know, it wasn't... I wasn't getting everywhere I wanted, but, you know, I got to you guys and I got to, Film Shortage. I was not super like hell bent on submitting to everything out there. And because also I just didn't want to spend all the money, but I did try to get it. There's a really great lit manager who I'm close with he's kind of, I think he saw the film and he championed it a little bit, like he really thought it was great, so I'm very grateful to him for that, and he encouraged me to submit it to places, but it wasn't being granted entry to a lot of the places that I was hoping it would be granted entry to, but you know, you liked it and Film Shortage liked it, and I was like, okay, that at least it'll be seen. And I'm happy with it. And everyone who, you know, I talk to or who I meet who wants to know more about my work, I'll send them that. And I feel confident about sending them that. I'm like, yeah, take a look at this film I made. But yeah, you know, I tried my best. I got it out there as much as I could, given whatever limitations I wanted to have for myself. I didn't want to be spending like ad nauseum, like, another year of like, I missed South by. So I was like, oh, should I try for it? Cause people were telling me I should try for it. I was like, no, I don't think so. If I didn't get into these things, then I probably won't get into South by. So.
Well, and the festival circuit is such a gamble. And if you're not a trust fund kid, not to insult people, but I mean, when I see people who are attending a festival every weekend and that tells me that they submitted their film to 200 festivals so that they got into like 50. And it's like, that's just an unbelievable investment. Like it's
huge.
It's, I know people who spent more on their on festival fees, entry fees than they did on the film.
Exactly. It's insane. That's why also, you know, my next project, you know, I wanted to be something with maybe some money behind it. Not like a lot of money, but somebody who's producing at least, you know, if I could get these, you know, you've seen the plays. I think those plays, there's a third play. There's a couple different third plays. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but I think they all should be films. And I had an idea of them being an anthology of sorts of different short stories and, with Pat directing. And, I would like to have money behind that. And, you know, with Pat's name involved and other people involved, I feel like it would do a lot better. And also, yeah, it'd be nice if somebody would submit for me, would pay for the fees. Cause I can't do this stuff by myself. I just can't, but I'm trying.
It's tough, but yeah, I mean, you got my backing emotionally because
emotionally.
I wish I had.
No, I hear you. Don't worry.
You know, I wish I could help everybody out, but the truth is, my wife and kid and I like hung out in the hallway till you came out.
Oh, that was
after
very
the
nice
plays,
of you,
and
yes.
I was like, "Are you going to shoot these?" Like, I think the first thing I asked you is, "Are you going to shoot these?" Because those. Those both make great short films.
Yeah, no, that's the goal. the goal is to make them into some films. I wrote another film, which is actually very in play, but might be a film, too, that is sort of like a King of Comedy-esque thing on getting your film into a film, not getting your film into a film blog. So it's kind of about this world that we're talking about. So it's actually, I wrote this thing for that, but it's like about sort of a guy who's sort of disgruntled and angry that he didn't fulfill the requirements for getting into a film blog, or that they didn't accept him.
Like a website, he's like, this website rejected me kind of.
Yeah. You know, 'cause there's a lot of these film blogs now. It's like a big thing among like all the, like the indie, like DIY kids that I know, like out in LA, everything is like, you gotta be like, the big one is No Budge. It's like, everyone has to get on this thing, No Budge, by this guy, Tucker Audley. He's the guy that I don't know if it's the big one, but it's like the one that for some reason he's gotten prestige. But anyway, so it's like, it's a little bit about that whole world of stuff of like, these film blogs that these one kind of person puts together and they curate. And I wanted to make it that instead of a film festival, because I thought that would be even funnier, because it's like even more like pathetic that somebody would be disgruntled about not getting into a film blog. And so, you know, he comes in with a you know, a gun. And you know, if you've seen King of Comedy, then you get the
for sure
the idea. But so that's the other concept I've got. But that, I've run into issues with that concept. People have told me the play is it's a little racy. It's a little it has some controversial subject matter and stuff.
Well, you know, it's an interesting time because I certainly have always been the sort of audience member and or whatever to appreciate people crossing lines. And like, if you're not going to cross a line, why are you making a film? Because like, you gotta, there's gotta be something right about it that especially for an indie film, right? There's gotta be some reason why Hollywood wouldn't make a film like that.
Right. Exactly.
Cause like I'm always, and there's, some of the stuff at Sherman Oaks Film Festival and our other festival, Film Invasion LA, like some of the stuff sort of has the, you know, mini major vibe, but in general, it's like, if you're just making a standard, you know, rom-com and or car chase film, like, well, why bother? Like they're doing that.
Right. Exactly.
Give the audience something that they can't get from,
right,
the mass media, from the huge corporate.
But everyone is so afraid of getting,
well, there's canceled. A cancellation problem. Yeah.
The cancel shit is making it so that, like, basically, and again, it's like, I mean, there's some merit to some of this shit, I guess, in that toxic behavior should not be rewarded. And I get that, but, you know, I don't
but
know.
If you feature toxic behavior and it might be punished within the film.
Exactly. I mean, the idea is that I want to depict flawed people and flawed actions. And I'm not trying to say that they're good or bad necessarily. I'm just trying to kind of depict them. But even just the mere depiction could be considered by people as upsetting.
You know, as a festival programmer now, I am experiencing something and I can't quite, so I'm just going to share, like, we've had films play at the theater written, directed, and starring gay men, and the audience is afraid to laugh because they don't know. So if I had stood up on the stage and introduced the film as, by the way, this was written and directed by a gay guy, so when he uses the word for bassoon that they use in orchestras in Europe is faggot.
Right.
So he's going to use that word, but you're allowed to laugh because he's allowed to use it. Like And we just had a film at Sherman Oaks Film Festival last week or a week before last, where written by an interracial couple made a film about what it's like to be an interracial couple. And the guy who's African-American wrote it, and people weren't laughing at the jokes because they were afraid they didn't have permission. And it's like,
right.
He is allowed to joke about being a black man in America.
Right.
And
right.
Like the audience is sitting there not laughing because they're a little scared that,
exactly,
that he's crossed that. What if, yes, a white guy wrote this and he crossed a line he shouldn't? And I'm like, we got to get over this.
I know. Yes. Well, the funny thing is, though, I think, and maybe this is my in a way, like I was saying, it's like I'm self-deprecating, but I also have this kind of cockiness sometimes too. There's this ego too. I think that, like, my theory is, like, this play I've written, once it's put into action, I think people are going to laugh. I think people will see it, and I think they will laugh. But I think people read it like an actor who's going to be in it, or, you know, whatever, someone who's going to be involved or whatever. And they go, I don't know, I'm afraid. You know what I mean? But, like, I feel like I know. You put it in front of people, they're going to laugh. Because it's so obvious once you put it into action. But, you know, I don't know.
I mean, if someone said to me, I'm afraid to do something... Well, it sounds silly, but as a parent, I've said to my stepdaughter 100 times, you should do the things you're afraid of.
Right.
Because those are the only things that are worth doing. Like, you just got to challenge yourself in life. And if you're a little afraid to do something.
Yeah.
That's a reason to give it a try because, you know.
For sure.
By the way, that's if someone's saying, I'm a little afraid of the repercussions or anything, like, no. If you're looking at it and going, well, it might suck. Well, that's a different reason. You're afraid. Right. But if you think it's good, but it's too controversial, oh, come on. Let's not pretend that, you know, you're in a Marvel movie and the world's going to see it and punish you for it. You know, like,
yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, I suppose that it makes sense, and I hear it, I guess, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just think that as long as you're intelligent about how you do it, and it's not to say I'm like a genius or I'm super smart, but I know that the way I wrote this thing was not, I think it's pretty clear, but I don't know.
Hey, well, you know, I'm not like I've read it, but I've seen Me as You, and I've seen two plays you wrote, and they're all, I mean, I think it's fair to say cutting edge, and you don't cut wrong. Like, look, I took a 15-year-old. Wait, was she 15? I think she was 14 at the time. I took a 14-year-old to your play about porn. And I mean, she was like, that was fucking great, you know? And her mom was like, you know, as you know, her mom.
Oh,
was like,
right. You said she wasn't. She's
like, oh, mom, the conversations at school lunch are worse than this.
Oh, geez.
So,
but, you know, my mom would kind of be like that too. If my mom came to see the play, I think she would get a little nervous as well.
Look, there's nothing harder than being a mom. It's the hardest job. Being a parent is hard. But when you got binary roles in your household, like, the dude lucks out and gets to be the fun one. That's just, I don't know. It's not fair.
No, I hear you. There's sort of, yeah, sort of.
And I'm saying that as a guy who does 97% of the housework, and I'm the caretaker, and I'm the cook, and I'm the cleaner. But, you know, it's fine.
Okay, so you're sort of saying it's tough to be a mom, but you're also saying I do it all.
And I'm saying it's the emotional element of being a mom, because I might do all the mom shit and that, you know. Well, let's just say a guy from 1955 would say, you're doing the mom shit.
Right.
But still, when it comes down to, like,
right,
seeing a play about watching porn, I'm cool with it and momming isn't, you know? So whatever. I don't know.
I totally understand. She's got her daughter there. Yeah.
But you mentioned your... Did you say your Vimeo? Is there like social, You're not a big social media guy, right?
No, I use Instagram. Instagram is my...
All right, well, you want to tell people how to look you up?
Yeah, if you want to look at my Instagram, at Kevo the Grossman, K-E-V-O-T-H-E, Grossman, you know, like Grossman. It's my last name, Kevo the Grossman. That's my Instagram handle, so... Yeah, you go there and you can get everything.
Have a link.
Yeah, no, I have a Vimeo link in my bio right now, I think.
Perfect.
So, you know, I don't think I've really changed the link in a while. I mean, like, you know, if there was something else I had to put. But, yeah, I mean, you can also DM me if you want something sent directly that you want to see. I'll send it to you.
Sounds good. All right, well, the reason I listed that from you was so that I could now wrap up this podcast with me naming way too many social media and website things. Because first, up at the top, I believe we talked about how Kevin's film, Me Is You, is in the Discovery Indie Film TV series on Prime Video. So yeah, please go to Prime Video, hopefully on a big TV. You shouldn't watch cinema on your phone, but open up a Prime Video app and type in Discover Indie Film into search. And then season 7 comes out on January 15th, 2023. So I think that's right around now. And enjoy great short films that made from people who care, people making it for the right reasons. These films are handpicked from the festival circuit. And you know what? It's $7.99 for a season of 10 episodes. So we're asking people to spend $8 to see like 25 great films. It's worth it. So just support indie film. Be nice. Like and subscribe and give 5-star reviews to everything Kevin's related to and everything I'm related to. Why not? Just be nice.
Yeah, we're not at the level to... like if we were big time, then I would say definitely... Well, you know, look, if you don't like it, just don't say anything. How about that?
That's one of the things I actually do say that at the end of this podcast. I say, like, there's a troll culture and, like, people watch 50 things that they enjoy and say nothing. And then they watch something and they go on IMDb and say, this is the worst thing I ever saw. And it's like, you gotta take time for the things you like, too.
Yeah, it's just not positive. I mean, look, one less positive review is essentially a negative review, but you don't need to trash something unless it really needs to be taken down a notch because it's like corporate level stuff, you know, or, you know, that's fine. Give that a bad review. I don't care. But if it's, you know, on the ground level, there's really no reason to shit talk it, but you can, although I will shit talk things sometimes.
For sure. Well, and there's a difference between shit talking, something, you know, from the Disney Corporation and shit talking something you see at a festival where someone poured their heart into it.
Right.
But anyhow, so if you want to learn more about this podcast or that TV series, it's discoverindiefilm.com, and on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And I said Me Is You was at Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021. So yep. If you want to learn about that festival, it's ShermanOaksFF.com and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. We hold that one every November. And every June, we hold a festival called Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about that one if you go to FilmInvasionLA.com and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And I'll just add, hey, at the very end, if you're still listening, thank you. And go to thccinema.com or at thccinema. And you might even want to check out a little website called watchhightv.com. But I won't even go into those. All right.
Wait, can I plug anything else? Or?
Of course. Plug anything you want.
I also want to plug there's a theater group that I've been doing theater with at the Silver Lake Lounge the last... 6 months or so, called the Underground Theater. Their Instagram is at the_underground_theater. That's their Instagram. But it's me and this guy. It's mainly run by this guy, John Pratt, really talented guy. He's been doing this theater thing at Silver Lake Lounge, so I've been doing stuff with him, and I'm very proud of what we've put together there. So we're doing that. We've been doing that. And
cool. Yeah. And that was at the_underground_theater.
Yeah.
All right. I'll have that in the show notes. I'll throw it in. So
nice. Thank you.
It'll be clickable if people are checking this out.
That would be great. Thank you.
I think we're good. All right. Kevin, thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, of course.
And thank you, everybody, for listening.